I'd like to talk to you about the challenges that we're facing in cybercrime. There are so many issues that trying to cover all of them in a short period of time is very difficult. When we look at the internet today, the challenges we're faced are very basically what's happening in the real world. The internet is global, it has no borders, and it's changing and adapting. Governments and national law enforcement are challenged by the transnational dimension of the internet. They find it difficult to understand how a technology like the internet, which is global, can face investigation by law enforcement and security services to protect citizens across the world. The internet also handles a wide range of harmful and illegal content and activities which occur on the internet. They cross national borders, and yet they affect citizens in everybody's country. If you look at the technology that we all carry around with us today, we talk about carrying around our mobile phones or our iPads. If we look at the challenge of mobile data today, this data is very personal and is carried with us everywhere we go. Your mobile phone will store information about all your contacts. It will store information about all your banking details, and it'll store your online activities that are performed on social networking websites. Twitter and Facebook, they will record the GPS location that you are currently located at when you put content on their services. When you take photographs with your iPad or your iPhone, they will record GPS information in that photograph, which shows where the photograph was taken. When we look at the challenges we're facing today, we look at a wide range of content issues that cause problems for us. Firstly, we look at the oldest problem, which is spam, unsolicited email that come into your mailbox every day of the week, clogging it up with irrelevant emails that you're not interested in receiving. But then we look at other types of activity. We talk about illegal child pornography and child abuse material, which is a huge problem for children across the world. We also look at malware and hacking that we read about in the newspapers every day of the week, attacking government systems, attacking banking systems, and that can be a huge concern for all of us. When you look at online drugs, or illegal drugs, prescription drugs, or in some cases fake drugs, they can be very dangerous when they're purchased across the internet from untrusted sources. And then intellectual property rights, hate speech, terrorism, and gambling. Among all these issues, there are agencies across the world investigating and tracking their usage and investigating crimes in those areas. For those of us working in this area, it is not clear which devices and which services will succeed. It's not clear which devices and services will fail. And it's not clear, more importantly, which devices which will attract a cult following, that people will adapt just because they think it's very cute or very well designed and continue to use it and buy it for many years despite better technology coming along, because people are attracted to some of these devices. Of course, what's more important for all of us is that it's not clear what are the unique risks that are related to each of these specific devices. And so it's very hard to stay on top of the challenges that these devices cause. When you look at the new challenges that we're facing these days, we're looking at the miniaturization that's happening, the recent development of the Raspberry Pi computer system in the UK, which has sold over 1 million devices in the first year alone. And yet it's almost that size, the size of a credit card. We look at the challenges of encryption. We look at the challenges of virtualization, whereby data and computing becomes virtually anywhere on the internet and can move quickly between destinations. And then we look at the recent developments in cloud computing. And cloud computing has got huge promises for efficiencies and benefits for the future. But there's also real challenges. When you're in charge of and responsible for data for your customers or perhaps for your clients, in this context, you have to ensure that the data that you're responsible for is stored in a secure manner and can be retrieved only by you in a secure and safe process. We see today there are many different countries adopting cybersecurity strategies. On the 14th of February, the day after President Obama announced a new strategy in the United States dealing with cybersecurity, with an executive order in that area, and the previous week, where we have the EU launching its cybersecurity strategy, we can only encourage more and more countries to have a clear cybersecurity strategy developed, which will identify the risks they are facing and the responsibilities of who needs to react to problems when they occur. At the same time, we encourage large organizations to do the same thing. When I quote from a 2009 cybersecurity strategy from Australia, it states that the production, sale, and distribution of malicious code has become a prolific criminal industry. It making malware stealthier, more targeted, and multifaceted, and harder to analyze and defeat. And that's from 2009. In 2012, we see that that challenge has got much worse. We see much greater numbers of attacks with more sophisticated mechanisms, what's called in the industry as APTs, Advanced Persistent Threats. If you look at legal instruments, one of the core legal instruments in this area is the Council of Europe Cybercrime Convention, which was signed in 2001, and many countries have adopted and ratified the Cybercrime Convention. But there are many more countries that have not done that. And these countries need to take those issues into account and develop their own national strategy in dealing with cybercrime and cyber terrorism activities. In the European area, we have seen the development of a wide range of legislation dealing with specific areas of concern, particularly child abuse in the area of child pornography legislation or child abuse images, and in the area of critical systems infrastructure, protecting systems against attack, protecting systems against cyber attacks. And in this area, we need to encourage more legislation to be developed to empower law enforcement and prosecutors and citizens, and to enable greater protections for all. The 2009 Australian Cybersecurity Strategy went on to say, there is a growing array of state and non-state actors who are compromising, stealing, changing, or destroying information, and therefore potentially causing critical disruptions to the Australian systems. The recent executive order in the United States has shown the same level of concern towards attacks against infrastructure in the United States. With the borderless, anonymous nature of the internet, attribution of the source of attacks is one of the most difficult things to establish. The global threat landscape is evolving. The spread of malware is more dependent on language and cultural factors. Many threats are spread now using techniques that target specific people. These people who speak perhaps a particular language or who use services that are local to a particular geographic region. Whereas in the past we would have seen attacks broadly trying to reach out all across the world, we now see focused attacks targeting in some cases right down to the individual level, forcing people to click on links in emails that will infect their computer systems, or encouraging people to participate in online activities that in the end can cause massive destruction around the world to banking systems or to organizations. These attacks target vulnerabilities or operating system configurations and applications that are unequally distributed around the globe. In 2011, a Dutch company called DigiNotar was attacked. it was broken into, and information created from that company allowed people to intercept communications around the world that in the past we would have considered secure. We were very lucky that this attacks against Digino Tower were detected and the attacks were prevented. And with the help and cooperation of many organizations around the world, it's impossible using the information gained from that company to use those attack vectors anymore. If we look at creating a culture of cooperation in the fight against cybercrime, we need to encourage the collaboration in a controlled and transparent and accountable manner between industry stakeholders and crime investigation stakeholders, bringing together the appropriate government and state agencies, and in some cases, in the area of child protection, we need to involve schools, children, parents, and professionals. And if we bring these people together, allowing industry stakeholders to create the cooperation in the sharing of knowledge and the sharing of information and the sharing of illegal activity or knowledge about illegal activity will allow us to defeat cybercrime and to deliver a much better internet for everyone. The world now spends over 110 billion minutes on social networks and blog sites, and this equates to 22% of all time online. That's one in every 4.5 minutes of people using online services. This type of activity, but online social networks, Twitter, Google, Facebook, and others, generates and creates a phenomenal amount of data. These data records are stored for agreed periods of time, and in this case, this type of data covers everything from subscriber data, which is the name and address of the people who are actually using these services. They contain traffic data, indicating every activity on the network. Sometimes they can contain content data, the content of emails and the content of Twitter's or Facebook pages. And of course, it also includes billing data, which provides banking details in some cases and credit card information. That data can be very useful to criminals when they wish to commit a crime. And if they break into those networks and steal that data, then there are many victims around the world. At the same time, this data can be very useful for law enforcement when they're investigating a crime. And so we have to achieve the appropriate balance in society about which data should be stored when and who it should be shared with and under what conditions. And most societies are working their way through these challenges to define open and transparent procedures with due process and access to the right data in a timely manner. If we look at the law enforcement end, we ask ourselves, why does law enforcement need this data? Well, usually there's two reasons. One reason is for criminal or national intelligence gathering, and the second is to look at judicial aspects of a criminal investigation. It could help in the identification of the offenders. It could help with evidence that something actually happened and the timing of when it happened and how it was done. Or third, more importantly at times, it can also exonerate innocent third parties, allowing people to understand that this data can be there to protect them as well, and that it's shared at the right moment, at the right time, can help people deal with these issues. You can see that the challenge of cybercrime today is quite diverse. There are so many issues and so many stakeholders involved, we all need to work together. What we need to do in the training that we do at ERA is to ensure that more people have adequate knowledge in the cybercrime fight, that they understand the role that they can play to provide increased safety and protection to families, to businesses, to governments around the world. We all need to work together to ensure that there's a much higher level of awareness of cybercrime issues so that we can provide better cybersecurity to all of us. Together we are strong, and that's what we're trying to encourage in all this, that people work together and share their knowledge and their expertise to ensure that we all get to enjoy the internet as much as we can.